Welcome to Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks for joining us. This week marks the 50th anniversary of the historic March on Washington. That march catalyzed the changes in civil rights for African Americans that would be fought for through the 1960s and beyond. It was also the event that enshrined Dr. Martin Luther King among the greatest orators of our time. Hundreds of thousands of people packed the National Mall in Washington, D.C. for that event. Among them were many from Wisconsin. But of course, the March on Washington affected the lives of many who did not make the trip east. Television producer Joanne Williams is telling an often overlooked story of the March on Washington in a special episode of the public television series Black Nouveau. She tells Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke what she set out to do in the program.
Producer Everett Marshburn and I thought about doing something for the 50th anniversary. We thought about this back in April, and we said we don't want to do the common just list of people who've been there, although we want to include them. We want to tell the stories of why, what happened behind the scenes, and the people you may not remember. My first comment to Everett was, most people remember the March on Washington as the fuzzy black and white video of Martin Luther King making the I Have a Dream speech. But there was a lot more to it. So we decided to set out and tell the story of Bayard Rustin, who did most of the organizing for the march, of A. Philip Randolph, the man who founded the Pullman Porters Brotherhood, the first black union of railroad workers. They were the two people who actually organized the march. And Dr. King was one of 6 to 10 people who came into the march and then participated in it. So we had to do a lot of additional research in that to find out more about Bayard Rustin and about A. Philip Randolph. Finding things about Dr. King was pretty easy. What wasn't easy is finding sound of these other men and telling the story about how they brought the march to life and how Dr. King was part of it.
Well, and I wonder, do you think there's a risk in over-romanticizing this as Dr. King's moment?
That's one of the reasons that we wanted to take this approach. Since most people don't know that much about the march except for King's speech, they think of it as only a march for civil rights. But it was originally a march for jobs and freedom. It was a march to get people fair housing, fair employment, raise the minimum wage, better education. All those issues were the reasons that they had the march. And civil rights became part of it. Those are also civil rights issues. So it gets sort of romanticized when you think of the speech because it was such an emotional, such a powerful speech. But it was only one of several speeches that day, and we wanted to tell you the story of the other people involved.
Well, and 50 years later, I think we do often think of civil rights as a single issue, but you raise a really important idea that civil rights is a plural. This is not just one thing. This is all of these things, and they were all represented at this march.
One of the people we talked to was Kurt Schmoke, the former mayor of Baltimore, who went to the march when he was a teenager. His mother said to him, "You're going to go." And he knew better than to not do what his mother told him, so he went. He had no idea of what it was going to be like or how massive it was going to be. But he says in our program that civil rights has evolved from the rights of African Americans to the rights of women to the rights of disabled to now the rights of people in gender equity and then probably the rights of immigration. So civil rights keeps changing. It doesn't stop. And the movement hasn't really stopped. It's just evolved into different areas, which when you stop to think about it, that's very true. Civil rights and the issues involved are still with us.
Did you approach this as a historical documentary or as something different, as just an issue-based show?
That's an interesting question. There have been a lot of historical things written in magazines, in newspapers. You're going to see an historical documentary also on PBS Tuesday night called The March. So we didn't approach it as this is a history lesson. We approached it as this is some information that you may not have known about the march. But my philosophy has always been that news and documentary is education and history. One of the phrases I used to tell people that news is the first draft of history. So it's a little bit of both.
You made sure that Wisconsin is represented in this special as well, correct?
Absolutely. We talked to people who went to the march from Wisconsin. George Paz Martin, who was only 16 years old at the time, he's now involved in the peace movement. He also tells the story of how Father Grappi came to pick him up, and his mother said, "You're going to go." And he said, "Where?" And his mother packed some stuff for him, and he got in the car with Father Grappi and a bunch of other people, and he went to Washington. So we tell his story. We tell the story of Ted Mack, who went to the March on Washington, and then when he came back, got involved in business in the People's Brewing. I don't know if you remember the People's Brewery, but that was an interesting story here in Milwaukee, and then some other business interests. And he talks about the kind of fear around the march before it happened, because a lot of people were afraid that this was going to turn into something violent, which, of course, it didn't. We talked to David Newby, who subsequently became president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO.
And we're seeing that again, I think, in this 50th commemoration of the march, that it's become almost exclusively a civil rights commemoration and with a focus on Dr. King and labor and the jobs, economic dimension of that march has been lost as a result.
It was attending the march that inspired him to get involved in the labor movement because he saw the importance of people working together to advance their causes. And, of course, we talked to Val Phillips, who is very familiar with Milwaukee and Milwaukeeans, who was the first African-American woman on the Common Council and the first woman on the Common Council and Supreme Court and Court Justice and many other titles that she held. But she talked very personally about being invited to the march by Thurgood Marshall, who was then very involved in the NAACP. Her husband, Dale Phillips, was the president of the Milwaukee branch of the NAACP. And she says Thurgood called him up and said, "Val, you have to come." And she said, "Well, I don't know if I want to go." And he said, "We'll pay for you to come." And her husband said, no, we can't let you do that. Besides, we don't want to get on a bus and ride for 24, 48 hours, however long it took them. So they took a plane and they flew to the march. And she said it was the best experience she'd ever had.
I remember Thurgood said, "Be sure to bring an umbrella and all like that, because it's going to be warm." But we forgot, you know. And we were on our way to the airport, and I said, "We didn't bring an umbrella." But there were people who bought 2 and 3 umbrellas, and they were generous with their blankets and their everything. That was the best, almost. Of course, the speech was historic, but the camaraderie and with the people there, everybody was there for the same purpose, and you could just imagine that they felt the same way you felt.
We think of this day 50 years ago as Dr. King's movement, but do you get a sense from the people that you spoke with that this was as much their moment?
Absolutely. It was, and it was supposed to be. That's what A. Philip Randolph and Bayard Rustin wanted it to be. They wanted it to be a day for all of the however many people showed up. They wanted them to be involved, and one of the things they did near the end of the march was a call for action. They had a list of demands. They said, "Here are the demands that we are going to present to the American people and to Congress, and we want you to go back home and take a pledge to be active in your communities, to fight for equal education, for employment, for equal housing." They wanted the people at the march to be involved. That's one of the things that they certainly did. And a lot of people did get involved in that. There are probably hundreds and hundreds of stories of people who were so inspired by this march that they went home and did something.
Well, and do you get the sense that that held true for the Wisconsinites that you spoke with, that this march, even though it was 1,000 miles away, had a direct and relatively immediate impact on the lives of African Americans and more in Milwaukee?
Definitely in Val Phillips' life. She came back and worked for the open housing legislation that passed the Milwaukee Common Council just about 18 months later. Of course, Ted Mack came back and got involved in the Congress of Racial Equality, which was his organization, CORE. David Newby got involved in the labor movement, and George Paz Martin got involved in peace movements. So they got involved. But there are probably other stories of people, Mitch, that we couldn't find who did something because they were inspired by the march. I was inspired by the march a little bit, I think, to go into news and education and information, because I thought watching it at home on TV like millions of others, I said, that's such a moving event and I wish I had been there.
I didn't want to presume that you were old enough to have been watching it, but you do have memories of having seen it secondhand.
I was old enough to watch it. I'll tell you, I was a teenager. I'm not going to tell you what teen number it was, but I did watch it on television and was very moved by it. You know, you have to remember in 1963, there were only three television news networks. There was ABC, CBS, and NBC. We didn't have all these stations to choose from. So when the march was on, it was on almost every channel, so you could sort of not avoid it. So I watched it and was inspired by it, and I think a lot of other people watched it and were inspired by it. Some people, of course, took different points of view, and that's all part of the march, too. It woke up America to what was happening in civil rights in the 60s, and I think it had an impact on changing it. Of course, the Voting Rights Act of 64 and the Civil Rights Act of 65 – then came out of that because Congress said we'd better do something because 250,000 people showed up at our front door saying do something.
What would you hope viewers today get from all the attention being paid to this anniversary?
Well, I think that anybody who was not old enough to see it will learn from it. We'll see what happened then. We'll get a little feeling of the enthusiasm and the commitment and the emotion and the passion that people brought to Washington on that day. You know, if you look at this black and white film, which is all we had at the time, of the people who came, they were all dressed in their Sunday best. The women got dressed in dresses and hats and gloves. The men wore suits. And that was intentional. They wanted America to see that black Americans were about business. They were there dressed in their best clothes to do some business. So that's something you should look for. People probably don't realize that. I would think that people who do remember it will say to themselves and to their friends and to their families, what have we learned from this? I remember that day. Let's talk about it. If nothing else, I hope the program that we've done for Channel 10 will spark conversation between people who saw it, people who might have gone, and people who knew nothing about it except what they learn in history books. And in history books, you learn just a little bit about it. But I have read three different books about it. I got the material from Washington when we went to shoot it about the March on Washington. And I looked at I'm showing Mitch now a little brochure that you get when you go to the Lincoln Memorial. They hand you this. It's called Changing America Youth Guide, The March on Washington. You can get this in Washington, D.C., but you can't necessarily get it in Milwaukee. So you watch our program, you'll get a feeling of what took place that day and what evolved from that and what more you can find out. We are also going to have a website up to include all of the interviews that we did. We could only include a little bit in a 30-minute program, but all of the interviews will be online. More pictures, more information, more background will be available. And I'm hoping personally that families use this as a way to spark conversation of all generations, and schools use it, it's free material, as a way to supplement what they teach about American history, because we don't really learn enough about American history.
Do you think a single event like the March on Washington could ever again have the kind of profound impact that this one event had, or was there something special, specific about that place, that time, and that group of people?
Well, there were two things specific about it. It was happening in 1963 as the Montgomery bus boycott was going on. There was so much action in the South going on that television was showing, and people were seeing it in parts of the country where they weren't familiar with it. So the awareness was starting to bubble up. The March on Washington woke a lot of people's eyes open. It was also the torch was passed at the March on Washington from A. Philip Randolph and Bayard Rustin to Martin Luther King and the civil rights, the quote, civil rights movement. So it was passed from one generation to the next. And hopefully watching the programs, and our program in particular, of course, will pass it on to another generation to give them information about what happened. It's amazing when I talk to my kids about this and I mention these other names, they'd never heard of them. They'd heard of Martin Luther King. They've heard of Elle Phillips because they're from Milwaukee. Other than that, they had never heard of any of these people. Well, now you're going to hear about them and learn more about what they did for civil rights in the 60s.
And in the immediate future, the program actually, your program actually airs twice.
It airs at 7 o'clock tonight. It's followed by – and Tuesday night is a whole night of PBS March on Washington programming. Our program airs at 7 o'clock. It's followed by our other special that we did last year, Freedom Walkers for Milwaukee, which deals with the open housing marches across the 16th Street, now Grappi Viaduct. That'll be followed by In Performance at the White House, which will feature the music of the civil rights movement. Performing will be people like Bob Dylan and Joan Baez, the people who performed at the march originally. And that will be followed at 9 o'clock by a documentary which was produced in part by Robert Redford. It's called The March, and I've seen a little clip of it, and it says that it's going to tell you why the march almost didn't happen. And then our program, let me say it again, will be repeated on Wednesday night, which is the actual 50th anniversary, at 6:30 on Channel 10 on Black Nouveau.
Well, Joanne Williams, thank you so much for sharing the story of the program and the good work you've done with us, and hope a lot of people have a chance to tune in.
I certainly do, too. Thanks, Mitch.
Joanne Williams is the host of the series Black Nouveau on Milwaukee Public Television. The show will air a special broadcast called For Jobs and Freedom, 50 Years and Counting, both tonight and tomorrow on MPTV. There's a link to the special webpage set up to mark the anniversary at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. As Joanne Williams mentioned, her show interviewed a number of Wisconsinites who attended the March on Washington. It also features, as many news reports have in recent days, an interview with Congressman John Lewis. Lewis was one of the organizers of the march and is the last speaker from that event who's alive today. Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke spoke with John Lewis in 2007, and Lewis described getting ready to address the march that day 50 years ago.
For early morning, August 28, 1963, I remember getting up, taking a shower, getting dressed, getting a bag to eat, leaving in some cars, all of us, the 10 speakers, going up to Capitol Hill to meet with the leaders of the Congress. I don't think I've been to Capitol Hill before, but we met with Democrats and Republicans on the House side, on the Senate side. And we came out of the Senate side near Constitution Avenue. We were supposed to be leading the march, or someone was going to drive us near the Washington Monument. And we came out. We thought maybe there'd be 50, 60,000 people. There was a sea of humanity. And the people were already walking. And we just sort of locked on and started walking. And it was like, there go my people, let me catch up with them. And the sea of humanity just literally pushed us on past the Washington Monument toward the Lincoln Memorial. It was unreal. It was unreal. And when we got up to the top of the steps and looked out, it was more than 50 or 60 or 70,000, 100,000. I think the press reports and the local law enforcement people said it was more than 250,000. When I see still photographs and videos of what happened, I think it was a great undercount. Because there was people, you see black and white people standing there together, young people up in the trees, people with their feet in the reflecting pool trying to cool off. It represented America at her best. It was one of the finest hours. And I remember when I was called on to speak, I stood up, I looked to the right, I looked to the left, then I looked straight ahead, and I saw some of the young people from my organization, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. It seemed like they were saying, it's okay, go ahead. And I started to speak.
That was Congressman John Lewis speaking on Lake Effect in 2007. Lewis was one of the speakers at the March on Washington 50 years ago this week, and the last one who remains alive today. As Milwaukee gears up for Harley Fest, we'll talk to the owner of the largest Harley dealership in the area. So shift down and stick around. Lake Effect continues in a moment on Milwaukee Public Radio.